Welcome back to No Big Deal, and in this episode, we are joined by Sophie from Lunio. In this episode, you're going to learn about the differences in how you sell against the status quo versus displacing an incumbent competitor. You're going to learn about the power of intentional language and also how to be really creative during your deals. A couple of bits about Sophie. She closed $420,000 in one quarter last year. And in her spare time, she is a house DJ and she'll be hosting an event in Manchester this year. Cue the intro.
Let me talk you through the two most emotional, stressful months of my sales career.
It's no big deal to call a CTO and tell I want to talk.
You cannot stand on the sideline and basically wait until the dice rolls itself. It's never going to happen.
I don't know if this is going to be on the record or off the record. It's almost like playing with cards, this job. Like, it's like you get given a hand of cards and like you have to do the best with what you have.
Someone might have been watching down on me.
Me and Jack going into this, when he originally told me exactly the same, like, oh, you know, Jack, I've got this idea, you know, what about this? My first thought was, my God, I don't even care if anyone, like, listens to this, you know. If I take one key takeaway from every recording, I'll be such a better rep.
This is No Big Deal, the sales podcast.
The first thing that we normally ask, Sophie, is, like, because everybody's got one of these big deals, and obviously we all love the fact that we want to have a deal, but what I like knowing is, what did it do for you as a salesperson? So, like, did it have an impact on your personal life, your career, your development, your professional sort of reputation? What did it do for you there?
Wow, kicking us off strong. Internally, it was probably the fourth biggest deal we closed as a company. And so, first of all, I was buzzing, because it was the biggest deal I'd ever closed. Just to put into context, it was 85K GBP. The biggest deal I'd closed before that was 30. So it was like nearly triple the size of anything I'd ever closed. So I was, buzzing. Not just for that commission, but the team internally, it just kind of gave faith in that we not only could sell enterprise deals often, but also for me, it just gave me confidence that, like, I could do this again often as well. And it's actually now this, like, not even the fourth biggest deal I've closed. So, and that was only just under a year ago, or just over a year ago, sorry. So, it was definitely a corner.
How amazing is that you can do that to a company? You can be like, Jack talked about this, like, you know, a year ago we'd never done this, or we'd done it once or twice before, and now we do it all the time.
Yeah. It's mad how quick that changes as well. Like, as soon as you've done it once, you're just almost like I remember starting in sales and feeling like selling like a 5K deal a year was like, oh my God. And now I'm talking about over 100K deals. It just doesn't seem right. It's mental. So yeah, very, very loved it.
Yeah. And it's not until you cross that checkpoint the next time that you think the next one's possible. I was listening to a podcast the other day about a guy who closed like a $34 million deal. And I'm like, whoa, that's mad. And in his head, he's probably like, okay, cool. Well, I've got to do the $50 million one. Like, so it's all relative, isn't it?
It's funny. Even talking about that, I remember, like, my dad is also in enterprise sales. And he joked, well, me, my partner Lily, and my sister, all AEs, right? So it's, the sales chat is heavy. I remember him saying once, he was like, oh, if it's like 100K, I'll get rid of it. It's not even going in my pipeline. And I'm like, mate, 2 years ago, I'd be gagging to sign a 100K deal.
That is such a big sales family as well for you. What the hell? Yeah. Family holidays must be.
We're strictly medic chat.
Yeah.
The Kennedy family of SaaS.
Yeah,
teaching you medic when you were two.
To be fair, he doesn't really care about it. He was like, all of that old nonsense.
Oh really?
Yeah, he's old school.
Yeah, nice. So Sophie, quickly, did you have, we're going to come on to the linear fashion of the deal and the lessons you learned and sort of like the strategies you put in place, mm-hmm. but did you do anything differently on this deal at the start when you got it? You're like, oh, this is a big deal, because this is going to happen to a lot of people that listen, and also it's happening to me now. I'm in a new job, I've just got a new deal that's coming, it's quite big, I don't want to grip the bat too tight, as the Americans like to say. But did you do anything in particular when it came in to sort of, like, you know, make sure you felt comfortable with what you're going to do next?
Yeah, so I kind of knew that it was going to be a big deal because at least the value was big and that there would need to be multiple people involved because I kind of scoped it out. As I said, they were our ICP. So they were a large UK e-commerce brand, which was like perfect for us. So I kind of built a checklist of things, not just medic stuff, but actually like steps I wanted to take to be like confident that I was doing the right thing at the right time. I also pulled in different teams like quickly, I would say, like quicker than usual. So I got customer success involved really early on. And that was mainly because they had told me that, well, first of all, they were using a competitor. So they were already aware of the challenge that we solved. They were bought into the concept of this is something they need to solve. But also told me that we're not happy with the service we get. Mainly because they didn't really understand like the wider impact that had on the business. And so I kind of looped in customer success really early to talk to them specifically about existing customers in their space and the impact that has on not just where we help, but also the wider stuff around revenue, how that feeds into their like value as a company, and all the kind of big picture stuff that the other provider wasn't doing for them. And so that was actually a turning point in the deal where I was like, we're going to fucking win this, like 100%, because they'd already told me, like, we're not happy with X because we're not really getting that service. Like, we can kind of log into the platform and see some stats, but I don't really understand how that impacts us as a business. And for us to be a critical part of their tech stack, you have to prove to us that, like, you link to our revenue, like you increase our conversions, you do X, Y, and Z. And it was only when I got customer success involved that we could kind of prove that. So yeah, I would say that's something I did differently from the start. And everyone in like the company was aligned on that, that it was the right thing to kind of bring them in.
How would you run an opportunity now if the same sort of situation happened? Top ICP account that was win with one of your like big incumbent competitors? Like, what do you do?
Good question. I would replicate that success process. I think we've kind of got a, advantage that we're still a fairly small team and that we can kind of use as many people as we need to move it forward and kind of make every prospect that we work with feel like they're important, bringing different people in to talk to different parts of the business is a good thing. So that's kind of what I would do now. Also, just really understanding like asking the question of like, do you understand how your current solution solves with these bigger picture stuff? And most of the time, I don't know this whether this is just a because the product that I currently sell is like early on in it's like in its infancy of like I have to do quite a lot of education around the problem that we solve and like wasted ad spend as a concept. And so, yeah, kind of talking to those bigger picture metrics, I guess, as a company is what kind of sets us apart, I would say. So I would always do that.
Is it that the platform's built with that in mind? Is it that the platform's built with like that valuable metric in mind that you align to that you can present it better than the competitors?
No, actually the opposite. So like I would say the platform delivers here's how big the problem is as like that's it as the metric, and then it's on us as the sales team and the CS team to kind of build the value of yes, we stop wasted ad spend, but actually this is why it's important forever and it always will be. And so whether you use Lunio or something else or us or something else, you have to have something in place. And so I would say the platform's actually secondary. Like, yes, we're a SaaS tool and yes, we sell a product, but it's actually more the service of preventing wasted ad spend and what that leads to if you don't solve it. That is our job. And so the tool itself doesn't tell them that, which is why I think when, for this deal in particular, when they came to us, they weren't getting that kind of service and success of like, here's how we impact X, Y, and Z. Because they were just given a platform and like, here's what we're doing for you. But actually, if they logged in, they weren't seeing that impact. Do you know what I mean? So it's up to us to measure that outside of it. And that's where the kind of service sales process comes in.
Did you do that better, or did you execute that like measurement of success better on this deal than you had on the smaller deals? Do you think that's why this deal was so successful and so big, because you were able to articulate better the value?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it helped that the value was bigger generally, because obviously it was a bigger account and a bigger customer. But yeah, it was for them to invest such a big amount of money, like we had to be able to prove and measure that success outside of just the tool itself. So yeah, I'd say so.
I'm thinking that's quite a pivotal point in most salespeople's sort of journey from going to selling run rate deals or selling bigger deals, is that you're much better at articulating the impact and the value outside of just the product, the process and the service and the outcomes that come with it. You've done the run rate deals so many times, you know what the metrics are going to be, you know what the likely ROI is going to be, you know where it's going to come from, you're so good at articulating it. You get a big deal come in, you get access to an EB, and you're like, I'm telling you, this is where it's coming from. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, I believe you. And you're like, okay, cool. All of those hard yards I did on those smaller deals are actually really relevant and they're important.
Yeah, for sure. I would also say I always find that small deals are harder. I don't know if you two feel like that, but like,
oh my God, yeah, 100%.
The amount of effort and the amount of like education and buy-in and sessions and whatever you have to do with smaller, because to them it's such a big investment, even though to us it's like a small deal. Like, the bigger, I always feel like they just kind of, if they get it, they get it, and they can move quick. But yeah, the smaller deals they've all helped though shape towards like what you know you need to do on bigger deals. Do you know what I mean? So
100% agree.
Yeah, you almost need to, like, you definitely as a seller have to cut your teeth down in like the SMB space. Do you know what I mean? You learn so much there, and you really get to practice. Like discovery, demos, like how to qualify. Like qualifying is such a massive, massive, massive part of our job. How much time have we wasted? Maybe even if we have got the contract signed for like a 5K deal in our career, to be like, well, that wasn't worth my time, was it?
Rich? Yeah, all the businesses. Yeah, I agree with that.
Something, Sophie, that you did like really well to, or talk to us about like how you broke into the account, or how you even got engagement.
I think the theme for this is like right place, right time, which is funny because my fiance, I actually met on a date with someone else, which was also right place, right time. But that's a story for another time. So I'll bring this one.
Hang on a minute. Who was on the date with someone else? You or him?
Me.
I love it.
Yeah. Back to business. So I'd already identified them because they were, as I mentioned, ICP. I was playing
talking
around
about your boyfriend or the account.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was also like finding a lot of success with voice notes and videos at that point. So I was like heavy LinkedIn prospecting, and happened to connect with the head of paid media, who was the right person. Perfect persona for us. Sent a voice note, got opened, never replied. And one of the things I still do now, actually, which is a little tip, is if you send a voice note or send a video, if they haven't replied, I'll put like a little arrow up and then say, only asking because we're working with customer XYZ in your space and they're seeing X, Y, and Z from using whatever. So they have to listen to the voice note or watch the video to understand what that message means. So it's kind of like a bit of a manipulation tool, but anyway, it works. So he replied to that saying, hey Sophie, this actually is something we're literally reviewing right now. Here's my email, get in touch, let's get a call booked in. I was like, what a dream. We had a call the following week, and from there it was just kind of a deep discovery. I already had an idea of kind of what they were doing across which channels, you know, that kind of understanding like high level, but it was really just delving deep into why they were looking. I didn't actually know they were using a solution already. And so what I learned on that initial discovery was that it was actually a kind of passion project from the CMO who was driving it and had said, right, we're using this supplier. They're not giving us what we want. I'm tasking you to kind of go away and find something better. And so already, like, yes, I had to do a little bit of education on that, that champion, that head of paid media, but actually I kind of already had a champion in the CMO, even though we hadn't spoken, because he already was bought into, again, that concept, and that they needed something, whether it was us or something else. And so that right place, right.
Did that person you originally booked the meeting with, did they get you in front of the CMO like on the next call then?
Yeah, pretty much. Which is the dream again. Yeah. Because they were already aware of the project, it wasn't a do we need something, it was just a are you better? And so all of the following calls and like sessions that we did were just tell me why I should use you over what I have now, like how are you better? And so it was just more of a, what I mentioned before about the customer success, it was just here's a current customer in your space that have achieved X, Y, and Z by using Lunio. Are you getting that at the moment from your current supplier? I knew the answer was no. And so it was that's kind of why the sales cycle was one short, but also really strong from the start. But I think the key thing here is that, yeah, that kind of making sure that, well, just reaching out to the right person at the right time, which was, yeah, just, I guess there is an element of luck, but also because we kind of got there first, it actually wasn't ever our product versus other products. It was just our product versus the current product, which is really, again, really strong, because they were bought into our process and understood why we were better already. So it wasn't a let's go and evaluate three other tools. It was just like, no, they are better than what we have now. So again, that was kind of a win as well, because they weren't evaluated.
There's nothing better than a self-sourced opportunity that closes massive. That is a very satisfying figure. And then the other thing I wanted to say as well is that you, in this sort of situation, it's really easy to just think, okay, I'm just going to start throwing shade on the incumbent, because that's how I've got to win this. And it's like, actually, I need to really compliment them for doing half of my job for me, which is educating this prospect on the problem and selling them in the first place. And then all I need to do is show them why we're better. So like, you've done a really smart thing there, which was like, actually just talking about one of your customers, which was more successful than them. So that they can be like, okay, cool, that's what we wanted when we first invested in this. We didn't get it. We're still sold on the investment. We just need to change tact a little bit and invest in a different solution. And it's like, yeah, you're right. You do need to spend on lost ad spend, but you just need to spend it over here.
I think one of the most effective things you can do in this situation, or certainly I've done in the past, is like customer reference calls. I think like having a third party go and speak to another or like your prospect, your opportunity, about a transformation that's already happened. Like, oh yeah, we were in your situation 2 years ago. We moved from X to Y. And I always tell the prospect, like, candidly, go and ask them the things that you're really nervous about. And like, they're going to tell you, right? And I always find that like really helps put the customer at ease. I think maybe especially as like you're offering it, right? Like, why don't you go to speak to a customer that's already done it? Like, that's a great idea.
You got quickly to the top, which is the holy grail of all big opportunities, access to power. That gets you budget, gets you speed, it gets you decision-making, gets you quickly through procurement. So everybody wants it. And one thing that me and Jack have been really focused on recently, especially when we're writing up any content or speaking to any guests, is about start with that in mind. Start with the end in mind. Now, you're always, if you're going to get a deal signed, you're going to get to the EB at some point. So you might as well start with the EB. And sometimes it happens by luck. Sometimes it happens because you said the right thing to the right person. Sometimes it happens because you had the right value proposition to say to your champion when you first met them. Tell us about how you did it.
Yeah, so I mentioned before, I was kind of lucky that the CMO was already bought in. And so it was like a bit of a passion project of theirs. So there wasn't a need for that education. But what I also did, and one thing I wanted to mention as well, is like, I know Medic always tells us, like, test your champions, make sure they give you the intro. Like, I do think that's important. But I also feel like, don't rely on anyone else to move it forward but yourself. So like, what I do now is, yeah, I'll run it by my champion. So like, we have to have someone at that kind of, you know, executive level to have buy into this project for us to move it forward. Typically we work with X, Y, and Z personas. And I am going to reach out to them. I'm just going to say, hey, we're working on this project with John. Here's what we found so far. Here's what I know your challenges are. I'll keep you up to date with emails like this. I'm sure we'll speak in the future, and just be assumptive with it. So that's what I do now. But with this particular deal, I did the same as well. So I sent that. I actually sent a Loom. So I just recorded a video saying, hey, I know that you're already using something in a similar space, so I won't bore you with the basics, but here's what I want to do on our next call. I'm actually going to bring our success team in to talk to you about a specific, and it was a named, like, a named customer in their space, which they would have known, like a household name. And so it was really easy to kind of get them excited about that next call. So yeah, that's, again, I feel like I'm using the word lucky. I kind of was lucky that they were brought in already, but like I still had to go through that process of delivering that value.
Yeah, and I think, do you know what as well is like so important? What you've just described there is like absolutely how me and Jack would say that is best in class multi-threading.
Yeah, 100%.
A video to the people that you want to speak to in the company with clear, you know, best case scenario, it's a video, it's not even a written email, with the reason exactly why they should turn up to a next call.
And also the reference of the customer who is currently achieving exactly what they want to achieve. And saying, by the way, this project's already underway with other people. If I look forward to meeting at some point, it's like assumptive, it's non-committal, it's not requesting anything. It's like that's a way that you need to be able to engage these sort of more senior folks, right?
What made you do that this time?
Well, I knew that for us to speed up, because like typically before this deal, so this actually took about 80 days to close, which was really quick for like a standard enterprise. I think before that, internally, like the quickest deal over 70k was 150 days. So it was like nearly half of the sales cycle. And so I was just like eager and excited. And also because I didn't have to do that education bit that I was used to doing, I could kind of be, I just felt like a bit more confident that it's just a process. Like I could almost sit back and be like, this is closing. Like I was confident it was going to close. It was just, I had to just play out the sales process. And so it wasn't a case of if they're going to buy. In my head, it was like, okay, when they're a customer. And so it was just like, I had this checklist of things I wanted to check off, and this was just one of them. And so I hadn't done that before. Like I hadn't sent a video directly to the decision makers before. I'd actually always sent an email, but I was like, why not? It's more personal. They get to know my personality before I've joined that next call, and they'll remember it. So yeah, it was a little bit different to what I'd done before, but I was just excited to get the deal moving. So it was a bit of like, yeah, excitement that kind of drove it forward, I guess.
It's funny, I had a deal review the other day and I was like, no, we need to do this and we need to get them onto this pilot, blah, blah, blah. And my CRO was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's just imagine that they're going to buy it. What do you need to do to help them? And that's like a mindset which I didn't have at the time. I was like, I've got to sell them. But it sounds like that's what you just did there. It was like, you were pretty adamant it was going to happen. You just needed to help them get through each stage, which I guess is a buying process more than a selling process. And you just facilitated the buying process.
Yeah. And this actually is something that I do where I actually always in my head, I'm like, and it's not when I have the intro call and like I have no understanding of like budget, decision maker, anything like that. But when I've got all the like big things that I know, yes, they can move forward. Yes, they've got budget for it. Yes, like the right people are bought in. I'll actually on, like I've got a deal tracker where I put all my deals, where I am to target, whatever. I'll actually write that they've closed already. Like just for my own like positive manifestation mindset, I put it on there and the day I want it to close. And like, yeah, that's going to move a little bit, but most of the time that closes. And it's obviously not me manifesting out to the world, but yeah, like I'm a big believer that you just need to be positive, and like, it's a when you become a customer, not if you become a customer. Like, when we get to that point of this process, like when I put you in touch with this person to speak about X, is I kind of use that language all the time, for myself, but also so that they're not, it feels more awkward for them to be like, actually, we're still at this stage. They can kind of envision when they're a customer. So yeah, I always use that language.
Fuck, I love it. Like, intentional language.
Yeah.
These are just such like tiny nuances in our roles that can make such a big difference. Do you know what I mean? And they're like, you know, it's, I think the top reps naturally do this like type of thing. Like, they don't say if, they say when, and like, they're assumptive in, you know, like, you're going to buy, you know, like, everyone buys. I think that's well, and I feel like, you know, in my own experience, in my most successful times, it was like you would just join a call as being like, you're going to buy, it's just a matter of like, are you going to do it this week or is it going to be in like 2 months?
I wrote that down as well. It's like, did you have a different, it sounds as though you've got this mindset all the time and not just on this deal, but you're pretty confident when you speak to your prospects about the value that you can deliver, and therefore you kind of speak as if it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the things I try and do is like position myself as a resource, not just a salesperson. Like, I am helping them buy some software, but that's not the only thing I'm doing. Like, I genuinely do want them to, one, be better at their job, two, for their company to be more successful because they've got a solution in place that solves X. But an example of that is I've got a like nurture cadence that has no call to action on any of the emails. It's like 8 steps, and it's purely content that I know they will find useful or they can action on like today. And it's not just our company content like blogs and on-demand webinars. It's like third-party content that talk about the problem we solve, that just kind of constantly builds in their mind like, oh yeah, that's actually really useful. Yeah, I can actually use that today. Like, it's something they can export and put into their account or whatever. And so, yeah, it's just kind of positioning yourself as like, they want to introduce you to their wider team because they know they've got confidence that, one, you solve the problem, but also that like their team are going to, one, like you and feel like, you know, they look good for introducing you into the team. Do you know what I mean? So I just try and position myself as like more of a resource to them.
I love it as well, because the people are way more likely to come back to you on that. Like, when they've gone cold, people are like, okay, yeah, that's really beneficial.
Honestly, I think the most LinkedIn messages I would get asking for like general advice are from actually people that I didn't end up selling to, that I either disqualified out and was like, do you know what, actually, you don't really need, like, let's say Sales Loft. You don't need Sales Loft. You should really go and buy them. I think they would be a better fit for you. Like, they're very aligned to your decision criteria. Those are the people that then ended up buying competitors or gone a different route that actually end up messaging me the most.
For sure.
Weird, isn't it?
It's so, like, it's always so strong as well to be like, whether you buy us or someone else, like, you need to buy something, and just being like really, and they're like, oh, so you're not pushing like your own solution on us. I'm like, no, like, I just want you to be bought in that you need something. Like, it doesn't matter if you use us or not. Like, I don't, you know, I would love you to, and I'd love you to be a customer, but actually I really want you to just solve this problem. And when you talk like that, they're like, actually, that's really lovely. Like, that's really helpful. And also it's just that confidence. It's like big dick energy, isn't it? Where you're like, you can use us or anyone else. Like, I don't really care. Just use something. And it's like, just don't have that inertia, like, just do something about it.
There's some really tactical things that you can do as well, like, on this topic, because I do really, really love the psychology behind this as well. Something that I remember doing was I would always want to be head to head against one competitor. Like, I really didn't like these big evaluations where it'd be like 6 and then you'd be like slowly knocking it down. And it always start with like, honestly, 90% of these situations, you're always going to look at Sales Loft Annex. Like, it's always going to happen. Like, trust me. Like, so honestly, if I were you, if you haven't already got a demo from them, go and get a demo from them and go and get a demo from them. And I probably would honestly ignore the others. And they're like, oh, sound. Okay, cool. And you're like bringing competition into the deal to then actively try and quickly build like relationships and come across as a consultative. And also, I would do that because I lost deals because I didn't do that. And they would be like, yeah, we're going to buy Sales Loft. And at the last minute, it'd be like, oh, we've been told by our chief revenue officer that we have to go and look at X. And then the decision criteria is made. They've all done it. And they're like, oh, actually, we think they're better. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
There's also something to be said. Sorry, go on, Sophie.
No, I was just going to say, I also do that. And like, I'll suggest competitors that I know are just like a little bit not in the same space, but they're they fight for the same customers, but like they're more like cybersecurity focused as opposed to marketing focused, or they're a bit like they're just different. So I'm like, yeah, like usually you'd evaluate us and them, and then when they go to them, they don't speak about like the marketing outcomes, they're more of the cybersecurity focus. So it's like, yeah, it's tactical. I like that.
And also, it makes you sound like sort of like you don't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not desperate for this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just sorry, I realized the time, that's all. And I wanted to ask you about how it closed, because it seems as though you speak very intentionally about bringing it to this end, but we all know it's not always rainbows when it gets to the end. I'm assuming in this instance it did close, but can you talk us through how you pushed it through to end and how the customer got live?
Yeah. So one thing I used, I don't know if you guys use, but I used Trumpet for mutual success plans. So I'd kind of mapped out, here are the steps we need to take, and actually work backwards from the kickoff date all the way up to signature and all the other steps. So I designed, like, you manage that, I manage this, we manage this, whatever. So it was the full mutual success plan that we were working on. And yeah, I literally remember getting that DocuSign, like, signed on my watch, and I was like, what the... It's just insane. There's nothing better than that feeling. So satisfying. But yeah, again, it was a fairly quick process. We kind of did that give to get. So if you give me, you know, if we fill out this really intense security for like questionnaire for you, I need a signature by X date. And again, that was the first time I'd kind of been really confident with signatures at such a big like value. So I was like really nervous to kind of do that, because you always just naturally feel like they'll be like, no, I'm not going to do that for you. But yeah, again, they were yeah. So the process from initial voice note to close was, yeah, just over 90 days, but actually from initial like intro discovery to close was about 80 days. And at the end, it was, once we'd had that kind of customer success call where it was again talking in that language of when you become a customer and giving them real life examples of how a customer in their space was seeing value, it was just a case of dates. Like, it was just a, we need this from you on this date and signature needs by this date. So yeah, it was dreamy.
Can I ask, Sophie, what makes you good at sales?
I think not being scared to get creative. So like, a lot of people always still say like, how do you just create videos? Like, I just can't speak to the camera, or I just hate the way I sound, or I can't like speak naturally or whatever. So yeah, like my creativity, I think, sets me apart, because I just try and introduce that at every possible stage, from right from prospecting all to the very end of like, I'm just about to send you a DocuSign, like a quick voice note or whatever on WhatsApp. So it's that creativity, I feel like.
It's personalized as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That personalization and creativity mixed, I think is what makes me a good salesperson.
Yeah, I think so too. And also, it's what helps the buying journey not feel so stale for the prospect. They're like, this feels normal. This feels quite nice. This feels natural.
Yeah. And I keep talking at the moment, like, more millennials and Gen Z, like, I hate those phrases, but it is what they are.
I thought you were going to say, I hate those people.
They're becoming decision makers and like buyers. So we have to like change the way we work. Do you know what I mean? Like, they want personalization and creativity and like it to be fun. Like, it doesn't need to be so gray and boring. Like, we can just be and have some personality as well. So yeah, I try and introduce that where I can, really.
Cool. What's your favorite sales memory?
My favorite memory is actually when I was 22. So I just, it was my first job in like SaaS. I'd been in sales and customer service for a few years, but hadn't actually been in like software sales. I was selling inventory software, and I was told it was a meeting with like me and two production, typically I sold like production operations managers. So I went to their office in Bristol, which where I was living at the time. And there was actually like 20 production managers, men, all like middle-aged men. I was like this little 22-year-old, like going to sell you some software, sat at the front. And I think it was one of my like standout memories, because I just feel like I handled it so well, considering like the anxiety sat there. And they were all like, what about this? What about this? Well, how are you going to fit in with that? Well, how do you integrate with this? And I was like, it was a lot. But it's one of my favourite memories. One, because it closed, so I was buzzing about that. But also, it was the first, like, face-to-face selling also was, like, I wasn't doing much of it because we'd all kind of moved to online sales at that point. And, yeah, it just stands out because it was, one, scary, but also it really challenged me to, like, just be confident with, I know what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter who's in front of me. Like, it could be 100, I'm all good. So yeah,
you're doing it on your own.
On my own, but, yeah. So it was me and my sales manager, and like he was actually quite quiet at the time, and like wasn't.
Bro, help me out.
Yeah, honestly. And after he's like, you did that really well. I was like, well, yeah, I had to.
Yeah, no choice.
I was just sat there on my own, so.
I can think, you imagine them walking up and I fucking hell, I was so nervous. Thanks for like.
Yeah. He's like, you did really well. I'm like, yeah. Well, I had no choice, but that was. It stays in my memory like all the time. And also it really helps me now. Like if I've got a demo with like some really big contacts or whatever in the company, I'm just like, I've done this top, like worse. Yeah. I'm good. Yeah. Like we're going to be fine. So it does really help.
There's no better feeling than those big calls when you're, especially when you're fully ready, you've got a big call, you do a big presentation, you're going to start telling people off. Sorry to a guest about that, though, he gets a bit maniacal about it, but story for another day. Amazing episode. Loved it, specifically around the difference between selling against status quo versus an incumbent. The language is different. The focus is different. You have to complement different things. Super powerful message. The other thing which I love was talking about when, not if, intentional language, bringing it into reality. Such a powerful way to speak to your buyers. And then finally, creativity, thinking outside the box, selling to Gen Z and millennials now. We need to engage them in a different way. We're in an attention economy, and doing things differently is the only way to get it right now. So love it. Thank you, Sophie. Look forward to speaking again soon.